Please click the subscribe button and the notification icon. It will help us a lot.
Hi, this is Rodrigo from Level Up, and today's guest is Brian Lopez. He is an IT sales and consulting veteran with over 20 years of experience. He specializes in remarketing the largest tech companies in the world, including IBM, HP, Cisco, Microsoft, VMware, and many more. He was able to generate a sense of kind of marrying emerging technologies and a strategic partnership for small businesses with Fortune 500 companies. And he ended up generating over $100 million in sales during his career. He had many awards, including the 2012 and 2015 Million Dollar Club, the 2014 Gross Margin Superstar, and 1.8 million gross margin sales. And he had other awards as well. During his tech travels, he repeatedly heard over and over from dispensary owners and growers of the cannabis industry that there was not a decent software for dispensaries or cultivators. There were many issues with the platforms at hand, and even the new technologies require a lot of integrations, and they still do. So pretty much he decided to create RightMap, which is the first and only technology in the US East Coast focused completely on supporting the cannabis industry. So without any further ado, welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me, Rodrigo.
So can you tell me a little bit about your history? How did you get kind of attracted to the tech industry and working inside of that? Pretty much, how did all this develop?
Well, my experience in the tech industry actually came from a summer job back in 1997. At the time, I went to work with my uncle, who was in the tech industry at the time, and I had expressed an interest to him in between my sophomore and junior year of college that I really would like to learn a lot more about his business and how, what goes into reselling technology. And so that was my first exposure to working with any sort of big tech firms. So it was an IBM reseller. So it worked a lot with IBM technology. And that summer job eventually became a full-time job, which then became really a full career in the tech industry.
And something that caught my attention with you is that you focus a lot on sales in the IT industry. And so far, at least in my experience, when I see people interested into tech, they are actually interested in creating the technology and doing all the technical stuff. But also I have found through my experience is that when the same people try to become kind of entrepreneurs and trying to sell their services, even things as simple as web development or something like that, something that came up a lot was that tech people ended up trying to sell either the product or the services through a technical point, and their clients will never understand them and they will never close the sale because of it. And I went through that process as well. And I had to understand the clients do not care about how this thing is being done. The clients only care about the results that they are going to get about the using the technology or using the services. So through your experience, what are the mistakes that you see tech people doing when, especially since you have been kind of helping small companies to get deals with big Fortune 500 companies, what are the most common mistakes that you see that small companies are doing when they are trying to get these deals and sell the services and sell their products?
Well, I think you actually alluded to it just a second ago, which is that when you're trying to sell a customer on your product, there's many products in the market that a buyer has to choose from. I think the hardest part is really trying to convey what the resulting business impact will be if a business decides to buy your product, as opposed to talking about some of the individual features of the product and trying to sell it that way. I think that what needs to occur is that you really need to approach it at a very, very high level. Our product will help you save money, or it will help you make money. It will reduce your overall expenses or increase your return on the investment. Those are high level business concepts. Yes, certain people do care about some of the features that are embedded within the technology that you're selling. But, you know, people are going to buy your platform or your technology based on the fact of kind of what it does holistically, not just because of a few different cogs in the machinery. All the cogs in the machinery add up to something. It's that something, that high-level concept that a salesperson needs to be proficient in knowing how to get that 30 seconds with someone who doesn't know your product. It has to have some sort of an encapsulation within a very, very brief amount of time with somebody so that that individual understands what your product does and how it's going to impact them for the better. That's a difficult thing to do. I think it comes with a lot of practice. I think it also comes a lot with understanding your buyer a lot more, because every buyer is going to be different. You really need to learn, and this is something that's taken, I'm still learning today, and you know, I will for the rest of my career, is you know, you're constantly learning how to figure out a buyer's persona, what a particular buyer wants to see or hear or feel. And sometimes that just comes with intuition. You can't teach something like that. You know, it's trying to teach somebody to be aggressive on the football pitch. You either have it or you don't, right? And there are certain things that there's qualities of salespeople that sometimes you can't teach, but you could certainly try with people. But that's, to me personally, that's what's been very that's what has been attributed to some of the success I've experienced.
Nice. And coming into this experience, I think you were in a very special place because you already had the knowledge on how to make sales, like how to generate results. And now you're in this point doing a lot of travels for tech companies, and you keep, and we had this new, complete new whole industry of when the cannabis got legalized, and now there were many people trying to exploit the opportunities that came through that. But obviously, because let's say it was a new industry, I'm pretty sure that there were many people who didn't know how the details will go in the end. But at the end, you had the principles, like sales principles, working whatever industry that you're in, right? So you start hearing the problems that people have when they were trying to grow the product, to sell the product. So can you go a little bit more into detail on how BrightMath was founded, and what was the things that you noticed that made you think, okay, like I have this very special opportunity here, like let's take advantage of it?
Sure. Well, when a situation and an opportunity presents itself, like what I was given, you know, one needs to be, I guess, either really crazy or stupid or courageous to take the sort of gamble that I have. I mean, I look at it and think to myself, wow, going back to 4 or 5 years ago when this whole concept of BrightMath was beginning to kind of take shape, it was going to require a lot of commitment and obviously a lot of money to get us even out the door to sell a product. But for me, I kind of looked at it like this is going to be a once in a lifetime opportunity that if I didn't seize upon it, I would regret it for the rest of my life. And I still feel that way to this day, even though it's been a journey fraught with a lot of failures, a lot of disappointing things that have happened along the way. And I would say that a lot of the disappointments have just been, or a lot of the failures have just been steps, obviously, to learning and becoming more successful. There are a lot of things that I just didn't count on when we were starting BrightMath that we know about now. I will tell you that I think a lot of my prior experience in working with high demand customers, you know, Fortune 500 companies that I worked with over 20 years that expected a certain level of performance, and not only just out of the salespeople, but out of the technical people as well that were supporting the salespeople. There is an expectation that if you're going to be at that kind of a level, that that's going to be kind of the norm. What I've learned in the cannabis industry, and this was sort of my vision coming in, is that the industry wasn't going to have a lot of those very polished Fortune 500 companies servicing the industry, because so many of those companies were basically, and still are, forced to be on the sideline because of federal law and things of that nature. This is an opportunity that is very niche, but also with a tremendous amount of opportunity and upside if we were to do the job that we wanted to, and to create a culture within Brightmap that was of that high polish, high touch point, high level of customer service, high level of technology, that over the long haul we would come out on top. We're still continuing that today. We're in the very early stages still of that happening, but I think that knowledge of me being in the tech industry and working with those Fortune 500 companies and working alongside of companies like IBM, Microsoft, VMware, they taught me how to service the companies that I am beginning to service now.
Nice. And talking about a little bit of the differences of the culture between these Polish companies and these newer companies, something that this doubt just popped my head that there is a lot of people inside the tech industry, especially in the startup industry, that, well, they dress pretty much like you and me right now, like polo shirts or t-shirts, and they are very casual about how they dress, even though some of these startups are making millions of dollars. But then you have like these Fortune 500 companies that are like suits, ties, and you know the drill. Do you feel that, or how do you see the chalk of when these two kind of environments or these two different cultures come together? Like in these bigger companies, do they look down upon the tech startups who are like more casual, or they don't care at all, and they just care about the result that they can get?
Well, I'll tell you, my clothes expenditure, my annual clothes expenditure, and what I spend on suits and shirts and things of that nature has gone down dramatically since I got into this business, because it's been a lot of times I'm either in a t-shirt, hoodies, or jeans with nice shoes. They're not nice shoes, but sneakers, if you will, nice sneakers, Vans, things like that. It's different, right? But I also think that one of the things that one must do is learn how to adapt in the environment that they're going to be in. And I feel like that's one of the things that I love to do, which is to go into an environment and adapt. I feel like if I'm going to represent this company, that I need to be able to wear different hats at the same time. And some days are going to call for the jeans and the hoodie. Other days are going to call for the sport coat and the button-down shirt. I think that this industry of ours is actually becoming very much about the button-down shirt and about the sport coats. And it's the cannabis industry is becoming very corporate very quickly. There's a lot of very, very smart, innovative people, businessmen and women that are coming into this industry that are beginning to really up the ante in terms of the professionalism, this corporate culture. We are so far gone from the days of the stoner culture, right? The Cheech and Chong. Those days are long gone. So, and you've really noticed it over the last couple of years. I would say in the last 2 years, it has become, it's been a dramatic shift. But let's not forget, we are in the cannabis industry, right? We're in an industry that is been in the shadows for decades upon decades. And I think it's doing a very good job of legitimizing itself. And I think it's even more pronounced given everything that's been happening with the quarantine and coronavirus, that, you know, the cannabis industry is now looked at as essential. That is doing wonders for our industry in its maturity and in really coming of age.
Yeah, I can imagine. And especially something that I started to notice for the last years is that the internet as well has gotten to a certain point where the flow of information, let's call it that way, like the flow of information is happening really fast. So I think that, as you mentioned, in the last 2 years, there has been like a lot of extra sophistication for this industry. And I'm probably guessing that part of that is because people all around the US can see what is happening, like from all over the US, and they can see through the internet what is happening, and they can pinpoint the opportunities like the same way you did, and now are coming from other industries and trying to bring kind of a new, let's say a new experience, a new vibe into it. And like, for example, right now I'm here from El Salvador talking to you and learning about this industry and learning about the things that are going on, and the people hearing about this are also going to be exposed to this information, and they are going to try to see new ways on how to enter the industry, probably a couple of the listeners that we have. And I've seen this happening with lately with many industries. So for example, on a totally unrelated industry was that, I think, I don't remember which movie it was, but it got like 1 million downvotes in YouTube, and because it was a really bad movie. And then pretty much people kind of realized that they had the power to influence the market, let's say, through the internet. But, and that's on a very low level, but I again, like we have like entrepreneurs and people who are very smart trying, like creating new products like you are. And I think that the time that it takes to kind of adapt to a corporate level or a more sophisticated level for many industries is going to become faster and faster as time passes by. And it's thanks to, again, the technology that we have, the internet, the fact that we can learn a lot from these devices. I think that is going to help a lot in the following years. That I think that is going to speed things up. And again, especially now with the lockdown, like what else do we do? Like we can choose to spend our time in our house and do nothing, or we can start reading and learning and doing courses and trying to find all this information to kind of improve our businesses. So
I agree with you. I think we've become the cannabis industry has become less activist driven and more business driven. We've seen this paradigm shift over the last couple of years, where, you know, the whole legalize it movement has kind of subsided because, well, most states have legalized and in some way, shape, or form. I think the final push will be, you know, what the federal government decides to do in the U.S. with it. But you've seen a dramatic shift in attitudes about the plant, and obviously those shifting attitudes have really promoted an entirely new industry that is really just getting started. I mean, I think it's going to exceed people's wildest imaginations as to just what we're all capable of doing. So, and I think you're with what you say about the power of the internet, something like that is only accelerated through social media and through the things that we can get exposure to content-wise through our phones on a daily basis. If you want to learn about the industry, all you got to do is pick up one of these, and the whole world is at your fingertips. A pretty compelling thing, right?
Yes, definitely. And can you tell us a little bit more about BrightMath? What does it do, like, for the people who are interested or who are in the industry? Like, what are the benefits that your platform provides to them?
Sure. Well, Brightmap is a is first and foremost a company that's built with the idea that we're going to take business productivity and combine that business productivity with a layer of compliance that addresses the needs of state regulators, but also that obviously the needs of the business owners. I'll give you an example of this where we've been very successful. We developed a mobile application called Scouts, a mobile application that sits on an RFID handheld that is a very cool tool. This is one right here. And this very simple device, which is an Android-based system, can go into a greenhouse that is growing marijuana and be able to scan that entire crop with RFID tags within seconds, and then be able to tell the users or the growers if their plants are compliant or not with the amount of plants that the state thinks that they have and where those locations of plants should be. It's a tool that's going to dramatically change and for the better how quickly they can audit their inventory. Something like that is, to us, is representative of the kind of technology that this industry needs, which is saving time, but increasing your accuracy of your inventory, and at the same time being able to remain compliant with what the state regulations are. So Scout is a newer product for us that's been very, very successful just in the first 4 months of its launch. Some of the largest multi-state operators in the country are already using it. Very, very recognizable names for the cannabis industry in the U.S. The other thing that we've done is we've built out a retail system called Greener. Greener is really the first of a fully integrated suite of products that allows for a dispensary to operate everything under one unified platform without having to buy three or four different subscriptions to disparate tools to run their dispensary. We've spent years building this thing out. And Brightmap is really all about, again, reducing overall cost, improving sales for our customers, making sure that they are 100% compliant with whatever they do. In the future, when we look at what we're going to be doing from an innovation standpoint, we have a platform that we would love to be able to debut in the next year or so that addresses the needs of growers and processors, and not just growers for marijuana, but also for hemp. As you know, hemp is becoming a rather popular crop to sell or to grow and sell. And we really think that we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of what we're going to do worldwide with hemp production. Hemp crop production is going to make a huge comeback. We're developing technology that's going to allow for our end users to be able to drive better productivity and be compliant with whatever the regulations are that do come out. And that, in a nutshell, is what we do.
That is awesome. And so far, I had a couple of people into these interviews who are creating like amazing solutions, amazing technology, the same way you are, but they had come from the experience of not having any knowledge at all into the tech industry and having to learn them from zero. I think you are the counterpart of that. Like, you already know the tech industry really well, and you had this opportunity and you were able to put together a team able to create this technology and improve it. So I wanted to ask you from your point and from your experience, how was the process of building out a team that is able to create the product that you just showed us, the technology that is going behind it, pretty much the difficulties of it, or how did you went about creating this amazing team that is able to create these solutions?
Yeah, I think building out a team and it's been the most difficult part of this job. you're going to find good ones and you're going to find bad ones. I've been very fortunate to have found some very, very good teammates and people that really have kind of bought into this idea of where we're going. We are still small, but I think our culture, we're building a culture here. And that's kind of the most, I think it's one of the biggest underrated things about a company is just what does a culture bring to a company that's looking to innovate, right? We could build the prettiest widget in the world, but if you don't have people that are committed to continuing on with developing that widget and selling it, you've got nothing. You could have a great product, but you don't have a team. And one of the toughest things that I've learned throughout this journey is that finding good, trustworthy teammates that will, you know, do anything that needs to be done in order to create success, responsibly, that is, that's a tough thing to find. So it's been an uphill battle. I think any startup is that way, though. I think that you're going to run into that. You're going to run into those opportunities, those times where things are going to be tough. I will say that the people that I've surrounded myself with are people that see the vision. They understand where we're going. I also don't hold back on some of the bad things that go on. People need to be able to take the good with the bad. And there's going to be bad news, probably more than there is good news. And we have, I think that we as a company have really conditioned ourselves to dealing with adversity, because initially we did not do a very good job. we failed miserably in a couple of areas, but we definitely have learned from it. So building a company I don't care if it's a tech company or if it's any other company in the world, it's all about culture. It's all about getting people excited to go to work every day and continue to want to work hard for this thing that we're chasing eventually, you know, whatever that is.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. Like, no matter what kind of company you do, you're going to have to face these challenges and have to implement these principles as well. And I'm going to ask you kind of a selfish question, because just to give you a context, we have this company called Frame Freak Studio, where we are an animation studio, and we have worked really, really hard over the last 4 years to kind of create a solid foundation. And we feel that we finally have it. Like, we just finally finished. And we took a lot of jobs that didn't pay well just because the project will help us a lot to improve our portfolio and things like that. And the thing that I'm trying to do right now is, now that we have the solid foundation, I'm trying to find clients that are my ideal clients, people who I really love to work with and be able to create pretty much sales videos for them, or advertisement or explainer videos that help them to create more sales. But obviously that is easier if I'm excited about the company that I'm going to do the video for. So in this case, well, in your case, I see that you have created very specific solutions that I don't think, like, they are not common knowledge. Let's say the things that you just mentioned about creating this artifact that can scan the crops and kind of give you all the inventory and check out if it is to regulations. That is not common knowledge. That is not something that people just hear out in the streets. My guess is that you have to go into do a deep research and talking to these ideal clients on what were the problems that they were facing. So how did you went about that? Because I would love to do exactly the same.
I run into this a lot, which is, how do I take something that to the outsider that's not involved in the cannabis industry, how do I take something that can be perceived as complicated and try to simplify it as much as possible? And then to tack on to that, how do I go out and pitch to an outside investor that may want to invest in our company that knows nothing about the industry? And how do I try to sell them on my company in 10 minutes? It's almost impossible. The message needs to be as simple as humanly possible, but you strive to make as good of an impact on somebody as you can. I think that the one thing about our industry that's very difficult to try to convey to people is just the level of compliance and the level of regulation on a daily basis that people have to deal with, right? It's different than me just saying, I sell a point of sale system. Well, there's a lot of people that sell point of sale systems. There's also a lot of people that sell agricultural software. But when you're talking about it in the context of cannabis, and when the outsiders begin to understand the level of regulations that they all have to adhere to, that's when people kind of go, that's very interesting. And boy, that sounds really complicated. And then you say to them, well, if you have an hour's worth of time, I'd love to show you really how this all works and why there's such a need for something like what Brightmap is working to address. It's hard. This is one of those unique industries that in 10 years, people may look at it and go, yep, I know exactly what that's all about. But for the vast majority of the population right now, they don't know what we do. And it becomes very difficult to try to get anybody to truly understand what you do on a daily basis.
Yeah. And how did you went about finding out the specific problems that they were facing? Did you have to go into meetings with them and ask them, what were the problems or what were they struggling with or pretty much that?
Yeah. We spend an astronomical amount of time on site with our customers. It's the only way that we're going to learn. It's the only way we're going to improve. I just came from a dispensary this morning. I was on site with them for 2 hours and they just went live with our software and we were there along with my lead engineer and you know, it's just more about learning. Like, okay, you've implemented us, now you're running our software. Now, where else can we be looking to add value? Where else can we help you streamline your business? If you get into enough of these places, you're going to really come out with something on your software eventually that addresses most of the headaches that are happening industry-wide, right? But it's just about getting yourself out there. It's about being on site as much as possible and walking a mile in their shoes, as they say. The other thing I'm really proud of is the fact that I've been able to hire a gentleman that has a 10-year background in the industry that really was very, very critical and central in developing the way that we do track inventory in this country. His name is Scott Denholm, and Scott was the former executive director of Metric, which is a track and trace platform that 15 of the largest states that are doing legalized marijuana programs are using. I was able to hire him last year, and with that sort of expertise on my team, who understands a lot of the business challenges, but also understands a lot of the regulatory challenges that persist through the industry, I hired an expert. I fell under a lucky star, if you want to say, or maybe it was enough charm that I brought him over. But either way, a guy like Scott, who comes with just a wealth of knowledge, combined with the amount of collaboration that we get with our prospective and current customers, this is how we're taking the next steps forward. It goes back to that idea around a team and building a team with people that are knowledgeable enough, but also humble enough to want to listen.
That is great. That is absolutely amazing. And also, now that you bring up this topic, how did you go about, and this is a leadership question, And I think that is a very important one, because I think many entrepreneurs on a practical level, they hear this idea of hiring superstars and letting them do whatever they are best at. And they hear it, but on a practical level, like, they think that they can hire somebody great and then tell them what to do when they are probably not the best at that. So that is counterproductive. So how do you go about managing a very talented team or team members? What is your position as a leader, or how do you handle that as a leader in order so that you can help them to do the best as possible?
Every employee that we have here is an artist, okay? Why would I ever want to try to limit someone's artistic capability? To me, you have to let that artistic freedom really come out of them. And I am by no means an expert in this industry. What I am is an individual that hopefully people can get behind, and hopefully I can inspire them, and hopefully I can motivate them. I have my vision. My vision isn't gospel. I do rely on other people's ideas around what is going to propel us forward. I'm looking for people that aren't so opinionated that, you know, they can't get out of their own way when maybe they might be wrong. Right? People that dig in their heels too much and insist on certain things are not going to last here. I think that we have tried to build a culture of people that are really, and I know that this gets used a lot, and it almost has become cliche, but, you know, humble and hungry. You hear this a lot. Humility can go a long way in this industry, but I also think, along with humility, people need to have, people understand where the vision is for this company, and they sign up for this. And so I try to give them every freedom to go out and make their impact on this company in one way or another. I try not to get in their way. As long as they're not impacting our ability to execute and to deliver new products and deliver them in a timely basis, and also to, you know, actually deliver on what we promised the customer, I honestly don't care how they get there. I think that me hiring really young workers has been also a real eye-opening experience. I am very much on the bandwagon of hiring our younger workforce. You know, these are the the Gen Z kids that are out there, the ones in their early 20s. They're a heck of a group to work with. And the younger ones are good because you can you can learn a lot from them too. I think from a technology standpoint, they are symbiotic with how they deal with technology. It's second nature to them. Guys like me, we're on the cusp, right? We're sort of living between that analog world in the 70s and 80s and the digital world. Yes, we are pretty proficient with our phones and our computers, but the younger generation, this is all they grew up with. So they tend to interact with it differently. They have new ideas about how to build things out. And to watch the things that they do with their creativity and their artistic ability and having things look a certain way or flow a certain way, it's probably the most gratifying part of this business that I'm in right now, is watching the things that they can develop. And they do it so quickly and so elegantly. That for me is probably one of the more humbling things that I see on a daily basis, is what innovation's going on and how good they are doing it.
Yeah, on that end, to be honest, is something that I had started to notice a while ago. The people who were like really, really young, about 18 years old, 19 years old, they had this spark that people that aren't that much older, like for, let's say, 25, 26, something like that, I see like maybe they have, I don't know, they are now comfortable at the position, so they are missing that spark and I'm starting to see it over young people more and more. So lately I have been playing with the idea of maybe I should start like kind of an incubator for young people and trying to develop these skills early them before they get to this point where that spark is completely out. Because something that I have been facing lately is this kind of problem where you find people who are really, really talented, but when you try to work with them, you realize that the talent is there, but the work ethic is not.
Yep. Big problem. I will say that that's the one thing that I'm concerned about as well. I think we sort of face a paradox where with our young workforce that we've always trained them to sort of work in solitude and to not build people skills, because so much of what we do is virtual and it's not being in the presence of other humans. I think that there is going to be very much a lost art on how to deal with people, right? Managing personalities. We could find the greatest code writer in the world, but if that individual does not know how to communicate with teammates or to be able to articulate what they're trying to do, what good are they? Right. I think that there's a problem that we have with somebody that is so good at what they do and so brilliant at maybe coding or coming up with something. But when it comes to people skills, they just don't have it. It's the one thing that I do fear the most. So again, what I'm trying to look for are people in my company that are not so set in their ways. And God knows a 20-year-old kid should never be set in their ways. They need to be mentored. They need to be coached along. They need to be put into situations that make them a little uncomfortable, because, being in that area of discomfort, whether, you're putting them out there and making a present to somebody or putting them in an adverse situation with dealing with maybe not the best type of situation, but having them work through it is really going to help them in the long term. Everything can't be peachy keen and rosy all the time. That's the one thing that I believe that we've not done a very good job of is we shelter our young children too much from some of the adversities of life. And when things do get tough, they don't know how to deal with it, right? That comes with personal interaction. Like, that's how you get problems solved. Yes, it comes in the form of ones and zeros, but looking somebody in the eye and having a conversation with them, I'll go back, that we are in danger of having that become a lost art in our society.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. And one of the reasons why I'm bringing this up is because, well, I have this limited belief about how much money a company could make in relation to the number of employees that it had to have. But lately, since doing these interviews and looking more about people who are creating the great projects like yours, I've been starting to kind of peek into this new world where I've been able to find companies that are very, very small, that have maybe between 20 to 90 employees, but they, as a company, they are doing a lot of money, like way more money than I thought it was possible for the number of employees that it was needed to generate that kind of revenue. But on the other hand, like what I'm starting to see in these companies is that even though they are small, they have like very motivated people, like hardworking people who have excellent work ethic, and the environment in these companies there is completely different. And it blew my mind when I was able to kind of be around that, like the energy that it brings to you personally of being surrounded by amazing people is on a completely other level. And I can feel my productivity coming to peak and doing things that usually will tire me out really, really fast. And as you mentioned, like we are now getting used to like work from home, like work online and kind of losing this touch with people. But when I, even though working from home is has its advantage and it's great and everything like that and everything else. But as you say, like I'm starting to fear that we might be losing that source of energy that can bring the fact of being surrounded with amazing people, because that brings a whole different energy and a whole different vibe that this isolation of working just with the computer will never be able to replace.
Yeah, I do not want us to be a virtual company. I know that we have an ability to be very, very efficient and very impactful from a revenue generation because of the use of technology. In other words, we don't need as many people to accomplish what we will with, you know, a whole boatload of people. There's technology out there that we can take advantage of. But again, you need a culture. You're not going to get a culture. You're not going to build a culture working remotely. You're not going to do it through Zoom. You've got to be in the presence of others. You've got to kind of live it and be in an office environment. I firmly believe that there are many, many advantages to being in an office together. It's been very difficult to me, and I think some of my teammates, that we can't really go to the office. We can, but you know, some folks are choosing to stay home with their children, you know, and be with their families and all that. When this whole quarantine is lifted, I can't wait to get back, because there is a spark that's missing. There's a certain energy level that is completely sapped when you're constantly working from home. I get my energy from going to see our customers because we still can, but that's me and not me being with my company and being with my teammates on a daily basis. I want to go see those people that are making this successful, and it's tough. It's really tough right now.
Yeah. And to be honest, I started building up like a remote company because I didn't have the experience of being in an amazing environment, but now that I do, it's like maybe I wasn't that completely right about building a remote company. Like, obviously it has its benefits, and now with the lockdown, like, we weren't affected. Mm-hmm. But now I'm leaning towards working in creating an office and being able to put together an amazing team for the future. That is something that is going to be in my mind a lot in the coming years.
I can't wait to get my team back together again. I've got employees spread throughout the country. So just because we open our office up doesn't mean that everybody comes into the office every single day. More than half of our employees are in different states in different time zones. So, but for those people that are here locally, and where we're headquartered, I believe it makes a huge difference. I think it's it's the great X factor in getting people excited about being here and having them work hard. And when all this is over with, we're going to throw a nice get together, and everybody will come in but right now everybody seems to be heads down and working their tails off on getting the next great thing out the door. But yeah, I can't understate it enough. Culture is everything.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to ask you like a tricky question. When you started Bright Math and you started this path on building your own business, what was something that you didn't expect at all that became true and is really important to know? I'm asking this in the spirit of finding the things that we don't know that we don't know, let's say.
I did not expect it to be this hard. I just didn't. You go in, it was my first startup, and you're like, man, I got this great pedigree. I've got this great idea. I've got these great people, and I'm in this industry that's growing exponentially. And you know, what could possibly go wrong? Everything could go wrong. That to me was probably and still is the most difficult thing to kind of come to terms with is that, again, this all goes back to the amount of failure that it takes to even get to that next level. I'm very proud of the fact that we are still in business after 3 years, right? We'll be at 4 years this summer on our founding. And it's been a tough road, right? It's been a long road upwards. We have faced so many different headwinds. If you think about the cannabis industry, not only are we battling the regulatory hurdles, then we started battling the funding hurdles. Money was being thrown around this industry, up until about this time last year. I would say the years of 2017 and 2018, money was fast and easy to get. We missed that. We missed that whole wave. And it forced us to really be very, very fiscally prudent with what we had. It also forced me to shelve some things that I didn't really want to stop doing, but I had to in order to save the company. So I don't know if people really understand like just the amount of sacrifice and hardship that does come with it. And I'm not trying to discourage people from following their dreams. I'm the first person to tell you, if you've got to scratch that itch and you need to go out and pursue your dreams, go do it. You only get one shot in this life and you never know what it's going to be taken away from you. So it's going through the amount of adversity and the amount of sacrifice and the amount of failure that it's taken to get just to this point, just even to this point, has been a deeply, deeply humbling experience. It's changed me. It's changed me on a lot of different levels. It's changed me certainly professionally, but personally too.
Awesome. And coming back to the funding, just to give you a little bit of context, I never pursue trying to get investor funding because our business is something that we can kind of do from the get-go, like we didn't have to develop any new technology or something like that. But it's not something that I had completely pushed out of my mind. It's a possibility that I still consider time to time, because obviously getting funding from an investor will help push things way faster. But what are the benefits and also kind of the downside of getting investment money for your company?
Well, the downside obviously is going to be dilution. You give up a little bit of control in your company every time that you bring on an investor. From our perspective, from a funding side, we raise money to date exclusively with angel money. These are friends of friends, family, people that have really bought into this vision that I have. I'm very flattered with the fact that, on our cap table, we have, I think, 36 investors, right? And they all come in at different times and with different dollar amounts. But each of them also has brought something unique to the table in a lot of ways. And I look at every one of those investors as someone that I could pick up the phone today and call if there was something that I needed to bounce off of them or needed to ask them about, whatever the thing may be. We've got a very esteemed list of initial investors that come from all different types of backgrounds. I think that has been one of the more enjoyable aspects of starting a company is being able to pitch your company to private investors. These are angel investors. Some of the tougher parts is dealing with, some of the venture capitalists and private equity and some of the institutionals, because you just don't know what their motives are. You don't know whether they're just using you to get market knowledge, whether they really have the intention of ever investing with you, whether this is just a big exercise in futility. Over the course of the last several years, I've begun to really believe that, the only way that we're really going to have this thing be successful is if we just put her head down and continue to sell our way through it. And I've never been an individual that's been looking to someone else to be responsible for my success. I think we've learned that even more so in the last year in our struggles to get larger venture money, just because the capital markets for the cannabis industry really dried up. So it forced us, as I said earlier, to make some changes. Look, those types of things come with upsides and downsides. And I would just tell you that, you know, you do give up a lot of control over something that you may have spent a long time in building. You just need to be prepared for that.
Yeah. And coming back to this thing that you mentioned, that you lost that moment of time where you could have gotten investment money really easy. Has there been like a failure or an apparent failure that actually has set you up for success in the future?
Yeah, I think in the early stages of our company, we were tinkering with a technology that we were pretty sure was going to work. And it was a spectacular failure. We spent a lot of money and a lot of time in working with a grower that was very, very gracious in letting us, you know, be a guinea pig. And, you know, I felt, you know, I still feel this way that, you know, I'm very thankful for them that they allowed me to conduct my science fair project within their four walls. Because of some of that, we were able to develop Scout, which was something that I really didn't see coming. But once the idea was sort of pitched to me about it, I had to make a decision whether we were going to fund development on it or not. And we ended up, you know, making the means necessary to make it happen. I don't think that we would have gotten to that point had we not gone through those early days of what we did. So product development has been really just a lot of trial and error, a lot of, you know, kind of burning yourself in a lot of ways, and then coming back for more. We keep coming back for more, but we seem to be getting better now, and we seem to be improving a lot. And I think it's served us really well. It's the whole idea again around the consistent failure and embracing failure. Failure should not be looked at as a dirty word. A lot of people do in this world. They think that because you failed, you didn't learn something or you're a loser. Not. Failure's learning. We've been learning a lot. So yeah, this early days for us were really moments of great clarity that, you know, I think we've gotten a lot more sophisticated and we've certainly become a lot more measured in our approach in a lot of different ways.
Awesome. And talking about these frustrating moments when you encounter failure and you encounter problems, when you feel overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do to get back to your center and keep in the game?
Well, in this very moment, right out that door, I have a wife and three children that are in the other room, so I get to see them every day. You know, I try to get outdoors as much as I can. I'm a big gardener. I love being outside. That's my way of kind of getting back to some sort of stability. That's what I do when I'm at home. That gets my mind off of things and allows me to clear my mind and to not think about some of the intricacies of the day professionally. So getting back to that, I'm a big fan of sun beaching and being out there and surfing. But again, a lot of that is going to be seasonal. There's a lot that I'm very fortunate. There's a lot that I can do outside of this world. You know, the professional world, to keep myself busy and happy. We fill our time with exercising, gardening, as I said, and when sports are back, then we'll be back onto the baseball diamond and lacrosse fields. So there's plenty of things to keep me busy, and there's plenty of things that I can do to continue to release and that's really needed. I think the people can hold on too tight, and really, if you hold on too tight, you do tend to lose the edge. For me, you've got to balance it out. You've got to have a work-life balance, especially people that are in positions of leadership. Your employees are going to look for that calm. They're going to look for that stability. They're going to look for that feeling like, hey, look, you know, we've got this. We've got it under control, and we're going to pull through this. It's that calming presence that sometimes is very much needed.
Awesome. And coming back to the younger generation, if you were to meet somebody who, a young student who is very talented and is very eager and pretty much is about to enter the real world, let's call it, and is very driven, what advice would you give that person, and what advice should that person ignore?
They should ignore the idea that everything about their career is going to be measured on what grade point average they got in college, or what they graduated with, or what their qualifications and certifications were. Frankly, I could care less about any of those. What I'm really more focused on for somebody coming out of college is, how can you interact with people? How are you going to interact with people in the good times and the bad times, right? It goes back to this whole idea that our world is shrinking very quickly. We're dealing with people from all different types of backgrounds and cultures and different parts of the world. So you're not just dealing with the same people that you may have kind of grown up around. You're going to be encountering different scenarios and different things in your life that will undoubtedly have an impact, more so from a human interaction standpoint, right? People can hide behind computer screens all they want, but at the same time, I really think what's going to make a great employee and a leader is how they deal with others. That to me is still the one thing that a college professor cannot teach, or colleges and universities cannot teach, is the socializing, the interaction, the communication aspect of it, right? That's, to me, that's the number one thing that college grads need to do, is to understand that, you know, you got to get out there. You got to push yourself out there. You've got to get involved. Get involved in your community. Get involved in clubs and associations, and network yourself. You know, you never know when you're going to need a friend.
Definitely. And for people who want to become better at sales, what would be your advice, or do you have any books that you recommend, or any challenge that you recommend for people who want to become better at selling?
First of all, if you really want to get good at selling, then find a good mentor. So going back to my whole thing about socializing and getting yourself out there and networking, find a good mentor, somebody you think that is a good person to kind of look up to and to learn by, right? I've been very fortunate in my life that I can count on one hand some people that have had an extraordinary amount of influence on my life. And I've taken a little bit of everything that they've taught me, and I've tried to, you know, do the best that I could with it. You know, in terms of what we do with that from there is, you can go teach, learn classes. And one thing I did was, I think it was one of my favorite classes I ever took, was 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. Absolutely love it. Took a class on it for a week in Chicago. I think I was 21 years old. I was sent out by my boss to go to that class. It had nothing to do with IBM. It had nothing to do with what was, you know, what we were selling at the time. And it was just about how you conduct your life, how you continue to sharpen the knife or the sword and to be better. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People served me very, very well. love the book. I love reading. I love reading books now about, you know, the struggles of entrepreneurship. I think my favorite book, the last one that I read that just blew me away, was Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. And it was just an incredibly relatable book for me. And, again, it wasn't all about the successes and how great big Nike is. It was about when he was first starting this up and his coach and how he got his coach involved and how his coach was a mentor to him. And it's that whole thing. So, you know, two things. If you want to cite out a book, yeah, go read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And go read Shoe Dog. I think that both of those two publications are timeless in what they can teach someone, whether they're young or you know, old, doesn't matter.
Yeah, and a recommendation that I'm going to add here is a book that I just recently read that it just caught me so good that I started reading it in the morning, and I did nothing else during that day. I had planned that day to do a lot of stuff. I didn't do any, just to finish that book in the same day. It's called The Third Door by Alex Benajen. And I also recommend the audiobook because he narrates the book and he gives it a whole different feeling. But pretty much the book is about is how this guy who is 19 years old ended up meeting with people like Lady Gaga, Jessica Alba, Bill Gates, even at some point Warren Buffett, but he got blacklisted because he insisted too much. Tim Ferriss, like he started like meeting all these amazing people, and with the idea of trying to get their most valuable lessons from them. And when it comes to this topic that you're saying, the networking, the being able to find high level people, I think that was a game changer, especially for me, since I'm doing interviews like that. That answered many questions that I have been asking my mind in my head for a long time. So I do really recommend that book, The Third Door.
I just wrote it down actually. So I will definitely take a look at that. I'm actually I'm in the market for another book right now.
Yeah, definitely. You should read that. I think you're going to love it. And this is like a really hard question, probably the hardest question that I have. But let's say you wake up tomorrow in a different dimension and nobody knows about you. Pretty much you have lost the company and all that. But you still have all your knowledge, all your skills, all your experience, and you have $500 in your pocket. What do you do to get back to this point, professionally speaking, as soon as possible?
It's a tough one. I think I would. Now, am I going? Can I ask you the question? Would I be going back to the cannabis industry, or would I be going back to something else?
Well, it's up to you.
All right. Okay. Good.
The only thing that I can say is that you obviously have your house. You have your place to live in.
All right. I'll tell you the one thing I would do is I would take that money and go pay for a class on learning how to code. And I'll tell you why. It's very difficult to teach people skills. What guys like me have is that intangible quality. But what we don't have sometimes is the ability to take some of that intangible quality and put it to something that is tangible, like a piece of code. And I look now and I go, wow, if I actually knew how to code, which to me is better than speaking a language, I could probably take all these things that I see on a daily basis and be able to do something with it on my own, right? And I guess, you know, if that to me would be the one thing that if I could, that's what I'd spend my money on. Because I knew I could have the ability to communicate with people and do that part of it, network. but to be able to understand some of the things that are happening behind the scenes with what I'm selling would be even more valuable to me. It's the one thing I wish that I had. And there's the other thing that I wish I had, which you're, you know, my last name is Lopez, but I do not speak Spanish. I wish I would have taken Spanish in high school, speaking of languages. But, you know, like that's the two, that to me would be the number one thing that I wish if I could, if I came back and, you know, we were starting all over again and I was in a different universe, that would be the one thing I'd do.
Awesome. And if you could pick the phone right now and call yourself when you were 17 years old, what advice would you give yourself?
If I could call myself at 17, be more serious at 17 about things. Be a little bit more, probably be a little bit more humble. You know, 17-year-old boys tend to kind of think that they'll live forever and there's time for all of it to just do whatever. But I don't know, 17 years old seems like eons ago and it kind of was, but I would say, and I think the other big thing is listen. Learn how to listen better. God gave us two ears and one mouth, and sometimes, you know, there's a reason for that. So yes, listen, take yourself more seriously sometimes, and be more humble.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. When I was 17, I was doing some very stupid things. On the plus side, if you can call it like that, because of the stupid things I was doing, I was close to dying many times in accidents. and that brought that kind of sense of, oh man, like life is really short. If this thing had gone just a tiny bit more wrong, I wouldn't be here. And I had like several of those of those experiences on a very tight time frame. I wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, but now,
yeah, but it's for me. There you go.
Yeah, I even have this kind of the remember your death kind of thing to not forget that.
That's true, but we don't think about that at the age of 17. We're focused on many other things aside from that. I think a lot of this just comes with age and maturity, and I can tell you that raising a family is the most humbling thing that any of us will ever go through. A lot of things that at 17, you just can't even amount to even understanding at the age of 43. But I think they would be my three things. And, I'm sure if you ask me that question in 20 years, I'm going to have a different answer.
Yeah, definitely. Also, is there any last advice that you would like to give the people listening to this interview that we haven't talked yet into this interview?
Be kind to one another, and we're all here on this planet. Be kind to one another, and
that's a good advice.
You know, it's amazing how kindness will how far kindness will get you.
On that topic, and coming back to the previous question, I think that when we are young, it's really easy to believe that being this tough guy or being kind of bad person is kind of cool. And yeah, I think that, well, this when I was young, I didn't thought that kindness was a strength, especially had a lot of people around me who weren't kind and had a lot of good things going for them because of it. But now, like as the years have gone by, like all these people who weren't nice, like they are in really hard situations, and yeah, I'm seeing the importance in kindness more and more as I grow up. So
yeah, absolutely. Don't be afraid to think with your heart every now and then, and think about you meeting a celebrity. And if you tell somebody that, hey, I met this famous person, what were they like? That's usually one of the first questions that you're asked. Well, what were they like? Well, that person was a total jerk. Well, then is that the way you want to be known for or known by? No. Now, if you say, hey, man, that person was great, super nice, down to earth. That's how I want to be remembered.
Definitely. And if people want to find more about you and more about BrightMath, where will be the best place to do so?
Visit us at brightmap.com, BrightMap.com. My LinkedIn page is pretty updated as well. And Brian Lopez with a BryAN is how I spell my first name. And that's really where you can find more about us. And I do blog almost once a week. We're always, we're writing on topics that are relevant to our industry. So yeah, check us out, like our blogs, and if any other questions or inquiries, we've got a very nice feature on our website that allows for you to chat with us and to get more information very quickly.
Awesome. I will put all the links in this post below this video, so you will have all the information here. So thanks a lot, Brian, for giving us your time and giving us your experience and your knowledge. Yeah, I truly appreciate that you have taken the space out of your busy schedule to be here and sharing all the experiences with us.
Thank you, Rodrigo. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much for having me.
So this has been the last episode of Level Up. If you like it, please click the like button below and also subscribe to the channel. Or if you're listening to the podcast, please subscribe to our podcast so that you will be notified when the next episode comes up. Until next time.